T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Carl, it's with great pleasure we welcome in longtime manager and former manager of the New York Yankees and now a broadcaster on the YES Network, Buck Showalter, takes a couple minutes to join us. Buck, Bob Papa, Carl Banks, happy 4th of July, and thank you so much for joining us.
Good. Thanks for having me. How are you guys doing today? Everybody staying okay up there?
Everybody's doing good.
We're doing good, Buck. So I was when we started the show, obviously 4th of July, a lot of famous birthdays, including our colleague John Sterling, the longtime voice of the Yankees. And I mentioned Al Davis, the owner of the Oakland Raiders. And I was relaying to Carl back in the day when I was covering the Yankees in the 80s and into the 90s, whenever the Yankees were home for 4th of July, which it felt like it was a lot, there was always a little extra juice in the building because it was Mr. Steinbrenner's birthday. What are your recollections of Yankee Stadium and Mr. Steinbrenner and 4th of July and that energy that always seemed to exist?
Well, there were certain games that you kind of earmarked as a manager. Anytime the Red Sox and the Yankees played the spring training, it was like the World Series. I don't care what anybody said. You didn't run out the second team on the road when you went over to Winter Haven. Anytime you played them during the season, if you played the Mets in the same way, we used to have the Maris Cup before we'd start the season. But the other one was his birthday. You know, it's funny, guys. When I went to Baltimore, Peter Angelos, the owner of the Orioles, birthday is on July the 4th. So I had quite a lot of – when I think about that date, I think about when. Just win. You better win.
That's a great story. Buck, baseball is trying to get restarted here. Obviously, there's guys testing positive. We know that. We saw it in golf, and we're going to see it. It's part of what we're dealing with on a daily basis. How do you see this playing out as far as baseball getting restarted, and how different is it going to be to manage a ball club, considering you haven't stretched out your starters with spring training in the first part of the season and going about managing games?
You know, it's funny. Aaron and I have talked 2 or 3 times during this, and believe me, the Yankees are in great hands with Aaron. And he was asking me about 95, and we came back to camp after trying to start the season with replacement players, which was awful, probably the low point in my career. But we came back to camp. We had 2 weeks, and the biggest mistake guys made was trying to go too fast with the pitchers. I heard a pitching coach say the other day that he thought his guys would be ready to go 5 or 6 innings right out of the chute because, you know, their throwing program in their backyard or somewhere during this. And that's a mistake. You're going to pay that piper. I think the guys that can keep their pitching staff healthy, what you don't want to have happen, I mean, let's face it, and the PGA Tour is hardly able to keep going, and they're playing outside with no fans. And I tell you, the novelty of having no fans in the stands, like we played that game when we had the riots going on in Baltimore, that novelty is going to wear off after 5 or 6 days. And you're going to realize, especially in the sport of baseball where you're playing every day, you need that emotional pick-me-up of knowing that you're doing something to people that matter. So that's going to be a challenge. So I think the biggest is keeping your pitching staff healthy. And I think what's really going to show up is the depth of organizations, because you're going to – it's just a given that you're going to have some people go down, and how many is too many? I don't know. That's going to question the answer. There's a lot of uncharted territory here, but you just don't want to end up playing a World Series with Double-A players.
Buck, you've always been a tactician in making in-game decisions. The pitch count situation is probably going to be more prevalent than ever now, would you say?
Yeah, I think the openers, so to speak, where you're starting a guy out of the bullpen and trying to if you're playing 2-3 times a week, that's fine. But when you're playing 7 days a week, I think the people that can get their starters healthily stretched out the quickest without doing something that puts them in harm's way. I mean, let's face it, the Yankees lose 2 or 3 of their starters, they're going to have some depth to step in, but it's going to be a lot tougher. Really, if you look at the depth of these organizations, you think that's what's going to show up, because as a manager, you're protecting these investments by the fans and the ownership, and you're trying to also be competitive. And every team had a month last year, whether you lost 100 games or 90 games, where you thought you might have it going on. And if you happen to have that month in July or August, then all of a sudden, I think everybody's in play. You got a chance to have some team that nobody's expecting over the course of a long season to be there, but could, and there's some false security that comes into that. So this is a whole different can of worms. I think managers are going to be very important in leading their clubs through this in some uncharted territory.
Talking with former Yankee skipper Buck Showalter, now part of the YES broadcast team. And, Buck, speaking of the Yankees, I mean, had the season started on time, they were going to be without some key weapons, with obviously Judge being hurt, Stanton, Hicks, just to name a few. This kind of worked out okay for them. Now they got to keep those guys healthy, but they appear to be coming out of this in pretty good shape to start the season, as opposed to how they were going to start the season originally.
Yeah, the thing that's been missing, I think, that people miss some about the Yankees in the last 6 or 7 years, what a great job Brian Cashman, their scouting department, have done in the player development. They have depth that has been provided from their system. And that's not like in the past, their depth had to be gone and acquired through some things that, quite frankly, they could do that some other clubs couldn't do, or they traded some of their people. But if you look at the depth that stepped in the last 3 or 4 years to keep them, you know, competitive year in, year out, it's come from their own system. So, you know, somebody that you're not expecting is going to have issues. You know, putting your arm over your head and jerking it down violently 100 times every fifth day is just not what the good Lord intended you to do. You're going to have some issues, and your what-ifs are going to be more important than ever in a 60-game season.
Buck, if I can just go down memory lane a little bit, these are the conversations when my father was alive I'd have with him. But you've coached some really, or managed some really great players. You've had Mo Rivera, you've had Randy Johnson, you've had A-Rod, and all of these guys were just complete players. And I read an article about you speaking on the development of Randy Johnson and how he developed into like a complete pitcher. And then there's A-Rod, who could probably play effectively at a high level any position on the infield. What was it about those guys that just made them special?
Well, I think their competitive button never stopped. You know, I said this about, I remember I turned in a report on Deion Sanders. It was playing for me in Albany in 1989, and we went to London, Ontario to play opening day, and it was 30-something degrees. I thought they were going to call the game off, Carl. But they decided to play, and Deion just come out of Florida State. We're thinking, okay, this is going to be beneath him. He handed out sandwich bags for everybody to put over their feet. It was slushy ice in the outfield. We opened up. Chris Chambliss was the manager of the London, Ontario Tigers. And this guy had the one single greatest game, home run, two triples, double, slide and catch with the bases low at the end of the game, sliding through the ice. And I remember saying to myself that his competitive button will never turn off. You know how many guys would just mail that in with that weather, just get it over with? But his competitive part of it, whether he's covering Jerry Rice one-on-one and he never had to tilt the field towards his side, towards any wide receiver. Mm-hmm. Bill Parcells used to tell me what a great weapon he was because you didn't have to tilt the field towards, say, a Jerry Rice. And he could negate your best wide receiver. Anyway, I got off the subject, but that's what all these guys had. They always, their button to compete always kicked in. They never, not throwing enough strikes wasn't good enough for Randy Johnson. He didn't want to be the 6'9" guy throwing the ball all over the place. You know, Alex wanted to be the MVP every year, and he was willing to do the things that it took to be that guy. Same way with Jeter. And when you get one of those guys, you know you got one.
Talking with former skipper Buck Showalter, Bob Papa, Carl Banks here on WFAN on this 4th of July. You mentioned, Buck, talking to Bill Parcells. Obviously, you know, different sports, but how often did you spend time picking the brains of other head coaches and just maybe kind of relay some of the things that you would talk about and with whom?
I got to tell you, one day in Texas, we had an early game, and for some reason, I'm trying to figure out what the reason was, but in my office, I had Bobby Knight, Bill Parcells, and Don Nelson. I guess they were all close acquaintances. And one thing I've learned is sometimes just keep your mouth shut. And I stepped back and let these guys go. I remember Parcells yesterday talking to me about positive and negative punting and kicking yards, the biggest stat in football. Now, every time I watch a game, I can't help but when I see a guy let a punt roll 20 yards, it's like a 20-yard penalty. And I can, you know, listen to him talk about different theories on kicking, what have you. But he was a big baseball fan. And I love when he would ask questions. And I would kid him about, geez, you guys play once a week with an off week or two off weeks? Give me a break. We play every day, and he would kid back. It was a lot of fun, give and take. But, you know, you realize when you're around guys like that, they were successful for a reason. It wasn't just, yeah, they had good players, but they knew how to pick good players. I think more mistakes are being made on player evaluation in baseball than ever before, it seems like, because they don't know how to evaluate the sixth tool. They don't know how to go get good the boots on the ground people that can figure out and make those phone calls and make those evaluations about players' makeup.
Is that a function of, and again, I always get criticized for the, you know, my take on analytics, but I'm pro analytics, but it nothing replaces the boots on the ground, like you said. And is that a function of, hey, well, the numbers are saying this about a guy, but no one will go and look and say, well, this is what he does good?
Well, I talk a lot to our scouts. You know, when you go to the ball games, find out where his mom and dad are and sit with him. Watch him interact with his brother, sisters. Watch him go into the parking lot, his friends. How does he interact with his teammates? How does he, you know, the body language? A lot of people go, what are you talking about? You know, those are the things. Terry Ryan, the GM of the Minnesota Twins years ago, used to have a theory that, you know, as a scout, you always have a gut guy. At the end of your presentation of players in your area, he'll always go, okay, who's your gut guy? And he said when you had an area scout who had known somebody and their family since they were in the 7th or 8th grade and was pounding the table on this guy, he said, I always found a way to draft that guy. Those were some of my best picks over the year. He said, but our draft, and this is what someone was saying the other day, the general manager of the Kansas City Royals made a great point. The draft is not about drafting, 90% of those guys don't play in the big leagues. You're drafting managers, head coaches in high school, coaches, you know, minor league scouts and player development people, front office people. You're putting people back into your system and you're teaching them the game so they go out and teach our great game. And that's what I worry about. You know, they went back to 5 rounds this year, and I'm afraid once the owners see how much money they saved, but you're going to pay that you're going to pay that price down the line because you're really hurting your organization and game by only putting 5 guys into it.
Buck, you know, you talked about the draft being reduced to 5 rounds, and listen, everyone's looking at what's going on in this country, businesses, as an opportunity to sort of reinvent their business. Obviously, the National League is the only league where pitchers hit. Do you think with the coronavirus and, you know, the fact that they're going to go with a DH that it will be DH moving forward forever?
Well, you know, I'm kind of just, okay, what are the fans want? What enhances their love of the game? I don't know about you guys, but when I'm trying to decide whether I'm going to games or not, hey, honey, the pitcher's going to hit tonight. Let's be sure and get the kids in the car. I ain't doing it, okay? And that's, you know, you're asking for so many things. And I personally don't care as long as we got the same rules in both leagues. You know, we're all competing for the same thing. That's why I've always thought they should get regional divisions. You know, I did a thing at ESPN years ago where the key with the AFL and the NFL and with the NBA and the ABA and all these leagues, when they merged, they got rid of American League National League. Just say MLB, and if you look at it, you can do 7 regional divisions. Everybody play at the same time zone. You reduce the – and you get more of a true champion, and you have everybody play everybody. You know, let's face it, the American League East is not going to have the same record, some of the teams, as the American League Central. And it's just not a level playing field. A level playing field is when everybody plays everybody the same amount of times. You could play 3 at home, 3 on the road, play everybody, and end up with a lot better situation. But the DH, personally, I think they should have it. I think it makes our game better.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. And I always thought that the Players Association would fight harder for it because it would keep higher paid veterans in the game longer because it would double the job opportunity for guys who could, and Edgar Martinez or whatever, that could play until their late 30s and be productive, as opposed to watching a pitcher who's pitching well I'm an American League guy through and through, Bronx native, shadows of Yankee Stadium. So, you know, to me, it always felt like I thought the NFL, the Major League Baseball players would fight harder for it because it's higher paying jobs to stay in the game.
Well, I actually, managing both leagues, American League's harder to manage in. It really is. Nationally, there's a lot of decisions made for you. It doesn't take a brain surgeon to know you got the bases loaded in the eighth inning. You got pinch hit for your pitcher. I mean, if you look, you know, your roster's made different. Your bullpens are put together a little different in each league. But the decisions being made in American League are based, are purely based on, you know, the ability of your players versus the situation. And it's a lot, you know, I found the American League tougher to manage in because of the DH.
You talked about situational baseball. Is it that big of a difference, American to National League? Just the in-game situation stuff. Besides, let's take the pinch hitting out of it. Is there much of a difference after that?
Not really. Not really. You know, the players are the players. I think, you know, I, personally, I found the American League a little tougher league because of the offense. And one thing that hits you when you go from minor leagues to the big leagues is how quickly runs can evaporate. The guys hitting ninth are hitting third their whole life. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it takes as much ability to play in the big leagues as it used to. It used to, you had to be able to hit and run. You had to be able to bunt. You had to be able to turn it over play. You had to play defense. You had to know how to run the bases. I mean, if you didn't, you didn't make the club. You had to be a rounded player.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, now I'm not knocking it. I mean, God bless them. You know, some great things are going on, but it's home run, strikeouts, and velocity for the most part. And I sometimes wonder if as much ability is needed to play in a big league nowadays as it used to be.
You know, to that point, Buck, and it's, this segues right in, the shift. Would it have been effective against some of the more complete baseball players as we see it today?
No, they people thought that that would correct itself, and players, I mean, I sat in on those competition committee meetings, they thought that the players would correct it themselves. Well, they didn't start hitting it away from it. They tried to hit it over it.
Hmm.
You know, until they let you put a defender in the stands and count it as an out, I remember talking years ago to Earl Weaver. Everybody talked about their three-run homer. He says nobody talked about those two guys, how they got on base. They got on base with a walk, a bunt, a single. Mm. He said we had to get two guys on base before we could hit a three-run homer, and people seem to forget that.
Buck, just going back to it, it feels like, though, you know, when we talk about what happens over the course of a normal baseball season, and you mentioned home run, strikeout, velocity. But when you get to the nitty-gritty and then you start getting into the postseason and deeper into the postseason, it feels like the teams that win are the ones that do hit behind the runner in a big spot in the World Series. They make a meaningful out. They advance somebody. They hit the ball on the ground and get a guy over from second to third with, you know, with one out, with no outs, to make sure that that guy can score on an out. So as much as the metrics and the analytics have changed, it feels like the teams at the end that get handed the World Series trophy are the ones that still can play old school ball.
Well, you know, some people call it old school. I just call it baseball. The Washington Nationals are a great example of that. But what happens is when you get into that, if we win, we advance. In other words, you get into the playoffs, people embrace the team sport part of your sport more. Hmm. They throw out, you know, how many tackles or how many passes did I complete? How many rushes did I get? How many hits did I get? How many strikes? They don't care anymore. They just say, okay, what does a team need for us to win a game? And that's why the playoffs are so much more fun to watch for fans. Now, we talk about reaching more minority players and potential players, which is a great, you know, I'd love to see it, but I worry about reaching everybody because I don't know how attractive the game that they're playing now is to a lot of fans out there. That scares me. As someone who's made a living and been in a game for a long time, it scares me that it's not as entertaining as it was back then. And believe me, the analytics, sabermetrics, God, I've embraced anything that helps us win a game. I'm going to make you sell it to me and tell me why in the eighth inning with 10 seconds to make a decision, I should lean on that. You're going to have to sell it. But it's important. Heck, we were doing that back in the 80s and late 70s, charting guys, where they hit the ball, what kind of pitches they hit, but not near the information that they have now, because they can catalog so much of it.
Mm-hmm. Carl, you called analytics from your days as a player just tendencies.
Just tendencies. We call them tendencies.
Yeah. We know that on third and whatever, they run this play four-fifths of the time on this side of the line because they got a great right tackle. They're coming that way.
Yeah. And if that right tackle left the game, the numbers would tell you you got to do a certain thing, and your instincts on the field say, well, that guy that they had there is not as good, so we should have more success. But Carl, you
said it right. You said it. They made you aware of these things, and then they said, go play the game. You know, at some point, you've got to make those decisions on the field. You know, sometimes I feel like we're developing such robotic players. Tell me what I should do. Tell me what I should look for. Tell me that. No, okay, I've got all this information, and we were in our advanced meetings, we were very careful about not giving too much information or certain things that coaches needed to know. And basically, let's let the linebackers know this, let's let the defensive backs know this, here's their tendencies, whatever. Now, go play the game. Go play the game.
Buck, great stuff. We appreciate you taking this time on 4th of July to share some thoughts about the game as it is today and take us down memory lane. And we'll be watching on YES, and we appreciate a couple minutes. Enjoy the rest of your 4th of July.
Well, congratulations to FAN 33 special. Impacted a lot of people. A lot of enjoyment. Y'all take care. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Buck.
Bye-bye.
Great stuff. Buck Showalter, former Yankee skipper, longtime Major League manager.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.